The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much for that, Wendy, and welcome back to the broadcast. Joining me online right now is Sandra Garasino. And let's give it up for Sandra because she's done amazing work. You know it as well as I have. Sandra, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
I'm very happy to have you here. Now, some people out there may not be aware of the story you put out this week. I don't know if they're living in a bubble or not, but you put out an incredible piece. I guess it would have been over the weekend, correct?
On July 7th, so just Friday.
Just Friday of last week. And, of course, the story, the headline, "What if Omar Khadr isn't guilty?" Now, I know you've been getting probably lots of calls and lots of people calling for your head, I'm sure, especially from certain corridors of public opinion. But how did you arrive at that headline?
Well, I have a background as a trial lawyer and specifically background as a criminal prosecutor, and have been watching this case with a lot of concern for a number of years. When this settlement happened, it just took me right into a deep dive, much deeper than I had done before. I had always felt that there were very, very big problems with the prosecution's case. And as I started to look at some of the tremendous investigative journalism that was done, especially by Terence McKenna of the CBC and Michelle Shepherd of Toronto Star, and what they uncovered led me to believe that the story that we've been given is a bill of goods. That the evidence in a proper trial not only would have raised reasonable doubt about Khadr's guilt here. In my opinion, the evidence, the best and most cogent evidence that the American military had actually exonerates him and actually is far more consistent with his innocence than with his guilt. That's with respect to the murder of Sergeant Speer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And of course, you mentioned Terence McKenna, and there were a number of other journalists who were sort of on this story from the get-go. I mean, the original report of the assault by special forces on this particular camp was that there were no survivors at all. And then they found under the rubble Omar Khadr, who happened to be alive. And it seems to me the only reason they charged him was because he was alive.
That was what they said. But they knew, the American military knew from the beginning. The incident report that was prepared by the senior officer in charge on the very day of this engagement described that the person who threw the grenade that killed Sergeant Speer was shot and killed by the assault team that had entered the compound,
right?
And that they had also found and shot Omar Khadr, and the photographs that were taken that day show. I mean, there's absolutely no comparison, or there's no alignment at all between the stories that are now given by the American military witnesses and the photographs of the site that were taken that day. Both of them can't be true, and these photographs speak for themselves.
Well, and I understand even the witness testimony has changed, too, because the one report I read, like, this was right near the beginning when this was all breaking. The one report I read was from one of the soldiers who'd gone into, who was there on the scene, who said it would have been physically impossible, given the extent of the injuries, given how he was found, for him to have even tossed that grenade. That was something that was testified to at the time, and yet, you know, that has seemed to be just completely disregarded.
That, and I think there's been a huge rush that was very much based on the fact that they were able to basically torture a confession out of Cotter, among many false statements that he gave. Mm-hmm. One of the concerns that I have from the prosecution's case is that a confession is only as good as any other evidence. It's got to align with the other evidence. False confessions, I wouldn't say they happen all the time, but they are not at all uncommon. They are especially not uncommon with young interrogation suspects, and such as Cotter. And so you always, as a prosecutor, you always have to be very careful. Does this confession, first of all, was it given in circumstances that make you believe that it is likely to be true? And second of all, does it align with the other evidence? And Cotter's confession clearly does not align with the other evidence. And in fact, he made other false statements, such as implicating Meher Arar in Al-Qaeda, which has been clearly proven false.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't put any reliance on Cotter's own confession. It's completely worthless. And it's not worthless just in the sense of, oh, well, we can't, it's not admissible, but it would prove that he's guilty. It's just not believable because it completely flies in the face of these photographs and the descriptions that you've given of other witness statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so how do you counter the position by, because there are people out there that say, well, we don't care if he threw the grenade or not. He was a terrorist and he doesn't deserve any type of, and the word deserve, I got to say, first of all, I don't think the word deserve is appropriate here. That's tabloid headline stuff. I think what we should be talking about is whether or not his treatment warrants a payout by the federal government.
Well, I guess so. My focus is really, really pretty narrowly on the question of what is this case. And having seen the U.S. military basically railroad a Canadian teenager,
mm-hmm.
Put out false, torture him, invent a false narrative, lie to the Canadian public, lie to the world, and put forward evidence that they have very strong notice that this is false evidence. The interrogator who interrogated, the first interrogator who interrogated Cotter was himself charged and pled guilty to essentially torturing another detainee to death. Killed a guy,
right.
And only gave evidence as part of an immunity deal that would protect him from himself being charged in his abusive treatment of Cotter.
Right.
All of these circumstances are the kinds of things that, that to me, tell me as a Canadian citizen that our focus should be far less on what is the character and nature of this. Young man,
mm-hmm.
And the payout, in my opinion, the Canadian justice system and the Canadian government and the Canadian public should be focused on how did we get roped into this? How did we get suckered into this? And what responsibility does the Canadian government bear for going down the garden path on this? Because they knew perfectly well what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Any lawyer with their head screwed on straight can see all of these problems. It's not rocket science to an experienced criminal lawyer to look at this. And Canada should have been not necessarily advocating for Omar Cotter as Omar Cotter. They should have been advocating for an impartial and independent assessment of the evidence and get to the bottom of it, get to the truth. And we were perfectly willing to just discard our responsibility,
mm-hmm.
to seek the truth and to demand that Canadians are subjected to a fair and impartial hearing. There's a very good blogger by the name of, I'm going to probably mispronounce his name, Craig Forces, who is a professor of law at University of Ottawa and very expert in this area. And he was pointing out in his blog yesterday that, we could have, had we wanted to, sought Cotter to be repatriated to Canada. And if we wanted to test our anti-terrorism legislation, he could have been charged as a terrorist here without any reference to all of these other questions, mm-hmm. these extraneous questions and this improper and tainted evidence. We didn't do that. So I think that as a public, our focus should be on our elected officials and our government officials. And that's where I think the focus should be.
Well, and on that note, you know what? We're going to take a first break, well, our only break left for the rest of this hour. When we come back, we're going to talk with more of Sandra Garasino and her take, not just her take, by the way, folks, the take of the Supreme Court of Canada as well. When we return, you're listening to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
In your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7, 24/7.
Northumberland89.7.ca.
Hi, this is Lane with What's Happening This Week. At the Bugley Legion, there's a Moon Ugar from 6:30. Everyone welcome. Saturday, the Bugley Legion has a meat roll at 2 p.m. and a fish fry from 4 to 7 p.m. and tickets are available at the Legion. Saturday night, movies at the beach at Victoria Park. The Secret Life of Pets, free seating at 8:30. Saturday, it's the Lavender Festival out at 295 Burnhamville Road from 10 to 6 p.m. There's a bonfire. This is a free family event with free food, drinks, and non-perishable food items are appreciated. Sunday, the Terrillium Walkers have a 5 or 10 kilometer walk. You can reach them at 905-885-6585. There's a Moon Ugar at the Port Hope Legion at 29 Thomas Street. Play at 1 p.m. All are welcome. Wednesday, it's Northumberland 89.7, free concert series in the park, July the 19th, featuring Cedar Rail from 7 till 8:30. If you have an event coming up, you can contact us at info@northumberland897.ca. This is Lane with What's Happening This Week.
It's a show featuring music that's a little left of center, right of center, and most times right on the edge. It's Country Outlaws and Alternatives. Hi, this is your old pal Rusty, inviting you to join us each and every Monday night at 9, playing the music that many other station staff love, but just won't play. It's an hour of countrified music with soul and just the right amount of cool. It's Country Outlaws and Alternatives, Monday nights at 9, right here on Northumberland 89.7.
Complete your dream home the ViewTech way.
These are the plans for my dream house. It's going to be perfect if I find the right doors and windows.
Step into our showroom. You're going to love these wood products by Sierra Pacific.
ViewTech Window and Door offers Sierra Pacific products for long-lasting structural integrity, energy efficiency, and the beauty of wood.
These are dream house worthy.
That's the ViewTech way, and it's been that way for 25 years. For Sierra Pacific products, visit ViewTech Window and Door, Church Street at Station, Belleville.
Northumberland 89.7 takes on the big local issues each Friday at noon on Week in Review. It's informative, sometimes controversial, and always of interest to residents of Northumberland. If you miss a program, you can catch it later by going to the podcast section at northumberland897.ca.
And welcome back. My guest is Sandra Garasino, and we are talking about Omar Khadr. Now, one of the things that come out, because of course you and I have talked about the evidence, the facts. But recently there was a piece by John Moore in the Toronto Star where he says, and this is alarming to him, that people don't really care about the facts on this case. Are you finding that true?
Well, you know, I think a lot of the people who are piping up say they don't care about the facts or appear not to care about the facts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, outrage is the fuel of the internet, and this is the kind of thing that is going to gather a lot of outrage. I actually have a lot of confidence in the Canadian public that as they that now that some of the storm has sort of passed over and things have calmed down a little bit, I think a lot of the people who are looking more closely at this are starting to become more informed, and I have a lot of confidence in the Canadian public. In the long run, I think people will try and inform themselves, and we're mainly hearing from the outrage engine right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even that convinced by the Angus Reid Institute poll. I think there are a lot of problems in that poll. And I think that, you know, if we measure people's views in 6 weeks or 2 months, I'm sure that either people will be much more informed or a lot of people won't even remember this, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting you say that, because, I mean, one of the concerns that I have, really, as a Canadian citizen, is the fact that we had, you know, successive federal governments. I mean, this started with the Chrétien government, Martin
Absolutely.
Government. But it was really the Harper government. And a lot of people say, oh, you're blaming Harper. But the reality is, it was the Harper government that sent their foreign affairs people down to Guantanamo. And they were there to interview Omar. And they were fully apprised of what was happening, how he was being treated, how the charges were brought about. And they didn't speak up. I mean, they basically abandoned this guy.
I'm not sure if that timeline is correct. If I'm not mistaken, when the CSIS people went down, that was before the Harper period, because that was before the Meher Arar, was it not?
I couldn't tell you. Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I thought it was in 2004, and again then again in 2005.
That was before Harper.
Oh,
Harper came to power in 2006. So, you know, there is no shortage of blame to go around. And that's another aspect of this that really concerns me. I miss the fact that we're not going to have a trial about this, because I would like to know an awful lot more about who made what decisions when. And what advice were they given? You know, we had CSIS going down there. But what was the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade on this? And what kind of advice was being given by other people within the federal government? I do think that the Harper government has been particularly, their issues have been particularly egregious, because they have really flouted the Charter of Rights, and not only in the Cotter case, but in many other cases. I think they just really never accepted the charter principles, and I think that they were motivated just by almost by a vindictive approach to the entire case here. So I do have problems with the Harper approach. Certainly by the Harper years, the dust had settled and there was a lot more opportunity to take a dispassionate view of things and to really examine the facts, and they missed the boat.
Well, I think one of the opportunities they had where they clearly missed a boat was in 06, when the Supreme Court of the United States tossed out all of the trials and hearings at Guantanamo because of the way the process was set up. Now, I understand that the U.S. government then, you know, changed some of the things they were doing and then refiled, but that was a real opportunity for the Harper government to show that they supported our charter by standing up and doing something that was, I mean, again, for them, I'm sure it was a lot about optics, right?
It appears to be. I mean, that's one of the tragedies about this case, not only for those who are supporters of Omar Khadr or for Omar Khadr, but also, I would say, for the Speer family and for others involved. You know, the political arena is a terrible courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible place to really examine the facts and get a full story, to really learn all the nuances and issues that actually do make a real difference. I do believe that there was every reason for the Canadian government to bring Khadr back and have a full hearing here in Canada,
right,
where we could have exposed any issues around all of these things. You know, remember Guantanamo Bay was supposed to be for the worst of the worst?
Mm-hmm.
Guantanamo Bay was, Dick Cheney said that Guantanamo Bay was for the people that if they would have no alternative but to kill these people if they couldn't keep them in Guantanamo Bay, because they certainly couldn't be released. Well, I think it's very relevant if Omar Khadr was being held as an innocent person.
Mm-hmm.
If he's a teenager and he didn't do what he's being accused of here, how does he qualify as the worst of the worst? It makes a complete mockery of all of this.
Well, you made a good point partway through your article when you said military evidence makes a better case for innocence than guilt. I mean, had Omar not confessed, what do you think the outcome would have been?
Well, I can't imagine. You know, it's hard for me to even see that they laid charges with the evidence they had, because It clearly is problematic just on its face.
Mm-hmm.
But the confession is like, to any prosecutor, it's like, you're kidding, right? You're kidding? I'm going to have to leave this evidence? But But yeah, without the confession, they absolutely had to have the confession, because there was no possibility, in my opinion, of a conviction in the absence of the confession. But I don't think that they ever, the whole thing is, it's just, there's an absurdity to this. How many thousands of American soldiers have been killed in action in Afghanistan, in Iraq? Mm-hmm. And how many teenagers have been charged with murder? How many anybody have been charged with murder? There's an absurdity to the entire, to everything about this case. But once again, this is how media frames and focuses. So we're all focusing on Omar Khadr. We're looking very closely at Omar Khadr. Mm-hmm. We need to really be looking at our own systems and the people that we pay to be responsible.
No, I think that's probably a valid point, because had there been no murder conviction, there wouldn't have been a civil case either filed in Utah, which Omar Khadr couldn't defend because he was in jail. And that's the whole basis of the Spears case at this point, right?
Well, it is. And, you know, one of the other concerning things about the Spears case is that one of the pieces of evidence that has not seen very much light of day is that apparently American soldiers were also throwing grenades. And as I understand it, there is evidence that suggests that Spears' injuries are more consistent with an American grenade than with the Russian grenades that the Al-Qaeda encampment had. This raises the question, the possibility, of the very real possibility of a friendly fire episode. And we know that the American government has concealed and covered up friendly fire deaths in the past. Pat Tillman, the NFL player who enlisted and was killed in Afghanistan in 2004, his family, it took years for them to peel away the layers and find out the truth on this. I think a lot of people have been let down by a very bad and tainted process. And now we have I think the Spear family is themselves being exploited in some way. By this, you know, this is I can say this as a former prosecutor. The families of victims and the victims themselves, you know, we're entrusted a very great deal with a huge responsibility when we're dealing with victims, because they put all their faith in us. So it's incredibly important that those who are charged with the responsibility of prosecuting in the justice system do so with unimpeachable motives and goals, and do so in the most fair and independent way that they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, you assert in your piece, too, that you know, the railroading of this Canadian teen, given the evidence, I mean, the Canadian government really could have run a Mack truck through their case. And it was Canada's job to raise hell about the railroading of this teen based on a lousy case. And yet, there seems to have been a presumption, like on the part of Andrew Scheer, for instance, and a whole bunch of other people that are speaking about this case now, there's a presumption of guilt. And that guilt is presumed, but it's based on nothing, really.
What I don't fault people for is concluding that Omar Khadr is guilty in this way. He pled guilty. He made a confession to the casual observer, to the lay person, to the average member of the public, that's an open and shut case. People like Andrew Scheer, who wants to be the prime minister of this country, has a responsibility to be more informed. The rhetoric around this, ginning up the emotions and getting people upset, is not, in my view, the appropriate way. Even if you're in opposition, even if you have concerns about how this settlement took place, there are lots of things to be concerned about here. Mm-hmm. But driving a political narrative that fans the flames of hatred, emotion, disgust, anger, I have a lot of problems with that. Mr. Scheer should be much more informed. He wants to be in charge of the Justice Ministry, the Attorney General's Ministry, the Department of National Defense. He wants to have responsibility for all of those things. He must know and understand about guilty pleas that are essentially extorted out of helpless and trapped accused people. Mm-hmm. And that's an incredibly important part of the justice system, that we have to be very responsible and guard against the improper use of power, the abuse of power. A confession that is wrung out of a torture victim is useless. And I do think that all government and all elected members have a responsibility to conduct themselves with gravity and with knowledge about all of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the mainstream media, and of course, a lot of that has to do with the editorial boards, right? A lot of that has to do with them wanting to, you know, sell the most papers or get the most TV coverage, and a lot of that has to do with going along with the government narrative. There were some journalists, as you say in the beginning, that have covered some stories that have come out of the war zone that don't necessarily jive with the government take. Do you think that's possibly why, for instance, the CBC didn't pick up on this?
I'm a little bit disappointed to see some of the CBC coverage. You know, a lot of editorial decisions get made in the rush to get a story out as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see a more nuanced view from the mainstream media or from the broader media. I do confess to having some really grave misgivings about some of the ways that this has been framed. There has been spectacular investigative journalism about this case,
mm-hmm.
and it really deserves to be brought out and to see the light of day again.
Well, Sandra, I want to thank you for being here, and always you have an open invitation to join us anytime on the Drive Time if there's something we've discussed that we think you might be able to bring us some interesting insights to. Thank you for this piece, though. I really want to thank you for this. This was in the National Observer, listeners, on July 7th. What if Omar Khadr isn't guilty? Sandra Garasino has done her homework on this. You've done your due diligence. It's a shame, frankly, if I can say this, that you weren't part of the Canadian government investigative team that went down there to speak to Khadr when this whole thing started to unfold. But I thank you for all the work that you've done, and I really hope that you know, you're able to keep to the high road, as it were, as the dirt is being thrown left, right, and center.
Well, thanks very much for having me on, Dave.
Thank you again, and good luck.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Sandra Garasino, listeners. She is the author of the piece, What If Omar Khadr Isn't Guilty? I really would urge you to read it. You can Google it to find it. There are also a number of other stories out there. The piece in the Toronto Star by John Moore, talking about Khadr becoming a millstone around the neck of the Liberals. Based on the information, if standing up for the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, if honoring the rights and charter of the Charter for all Canadian citizens, despite public opinion, is the role and responsibility of the federal government. Given that is the case, then I would urge more people to get informed and stand up for the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.